Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the Yanks Go Yard podcast with Adam Weinrib and Thomas Carinante.
Oh, what's up, everybody? Welcome on into the Yanks Go Yard podcast. I am your solo host today, Thomas Carinante. Adam Weinrib is enjoying a trip to Italy, Italia, the land of Hal Steinbrenner, where he closed a deal with Aaron Judge. You guys remember that? Pretty good times. But yeah, we're here today. We're having a good time. I'm not going to keep you guys too long. We have a few things to talk about. Series with the Royals. Yankees already wrapped it up. We got an afternoon game that's about to kick off in a minute. Hopefully we could see some entertaining highlights while we're live on the pod. But we got a little Red Sox series preview coming up. We got to talk this pitching. We got to talk Carlos Rodon. We got to talk Luis Gil. How about this offense? Giancarlo Stanton ripping bombs into the atmosphere. Everything's coming together. And I want to just be on the record once again that everybody who was whining, complaining, crying about the Friday and Saturday start of the series with the Los Angeles Dodgers, I mean, what more can you ask for with the response since then? Four games, 30 runs, four wins, and we'll see what happens today. Look, every lineup, any lineup with a player as talented as Juan Soto in it, and will have to adjust if he is going to miss time with injury. That's just the way it goes, man. I know it was a rough two games against the Dodgers. It would have been nice to capture that one on Friday because Cody Poteet went toe-to-toe with Yoshinobu Yamamoto, but can't win every game. Is it not enough being the best team in baseball? Should probably just be appreciative of that, guys. Anyway, I think, you know, we're turning a corner. Discourse is getting better. Everyone's starting to be a little bit more healthy about it. So, yeah, before we get into things, please. Well, first of all, thank you for tuning in. We appreciate it, as always. Please be active in the chat. We can answer any questions, discuss things that we might be missing on our rundown for the week. But please like and subscribe to the YouTube channel, Yanks Go Yard. Pretty simple stuff. Head on over to yanksgoyard.com. We got plenty of content there for you. We're having a good time. The podcast can be found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and really wherever you get your podcasts. There's no more Google Podcasts. That's what we've been informed of. But otherwise, we're rolling strong. People are tuning in, and we appreciate it as always. So before we get into things, as usual, we have a offer. DraftKings is here, folks. It's here for everybody. They tailor it to Yankee fans, but I know Yankees haters are in here. So if you're going to hang out with us and you're going to listen to this painful talk, you might as well cash in on an offer. DraftKings is here with a fantastic sign-up bonus for new users. New customers can place a $5 bet on any sport to instantly claim $150 in bonus bets. All you got to do is sign up with the code YanksGoYard, the name of the thing. The best part is that you'll receive these awards even if that first bet loses. Doesn't matter the outcome, just got to place the bet. Using the code YanksGoYard not only gets you these bonuses, but it directly supports the podcast. Thomas, Adam, YanksGoYard.com, having a good time, trying to keep you guys informed, have it all be entertaining and fun. It's a long baseball season. Got to stay engaged, got to make sure it's as entertaining and pleasurable as possible. We're here to make that happen for you. So please make sure to use that code YanksGoYard to maximize those first bets. This offer is only available to new customers who are 21 and older and physically present in legal gambling states. Please remember to always gamble responsibly. Check the episode description for the full terms of the offer to see if you qualify. Man, never gets old reading that over and over again. Anyway, three straight over the Royals. On the road, the Royals, sure, historically, not the greatest team. Historically, Yankees kind of beat up on them. But again, much like the discussion we've had about the Twins and how the Yankees have had their way with them over the last 25 years or so, this is a good team. The Royals, they really did a good job fixing their squad in the offseason, signed Bobby Witt Jr. to that massive extension, which is looking to be genius right now. He's one of the best players in baseball. We've got to see him and Anthony Volpe go head-to-head in this series of two of the best shortstops that are in the game right now. Absolute pleasure. We're having a great time. But, the Royals are one of the better teams, 39-30 after last night's demolition. But heading into the series, they were 39-27. Then they ran into the wrecking ball that was the New York Yankees. We can't overlook the fact that just because these teams are not the greatest from a historical standpoint, are to be overlooked if they're having a really good year and we're able to take advantage of that. The league changes year to year. We see different squads surprise. We see players come out of the woodwork that change the dynamic of the league, the complexion of the standings, the power rankings, whatever you want to call it. The Royals are one of those teams. They've surprised. They play a very original brand of baseball. They play good defense. They hit for power. They hit for average. They're pesky on the base paths. They have really good pitching. We've just managed to neutralize them. Our offense is wildly overwhelming. And the fact that we got out to early leads in all of these games, something to consider moving forward, because if the Yankees can bully these better teams early on, it's going to set the tone really well for the pitching staff. Everybody reiterated that this week. Everybody did. Carlos Rodon said it was easier to work with that leader. He said it allowed him to attack the strike zone a little bit more, which we know is tough to do when, maybe your defense isn't having a good night, you're not entirely trusting them, or there's a razor-thin margin for error. We look back to last year. The pitchers were put under a ton of duress. Every single time they were out there, it was a one-run or tie game. The pitcher felt constant pressure to not make that mistake, not make that one bad pitch. This year, much more relaxed atmosphere. It's not carefree. It's just more so laid back. Let the pitcher do their thing. Get that pitch mix up. Trust the defense behind them. Keep the lead at a manageable cushion, and everything's going to look better. Same goes for Marcus Stroman in that second night. Yankees got out to a 6-run lead, and we know he's had problems not controlling the zone, but he labors often. He threw 102 pitches through 5 2/3 in this. Aaron Boone hooked him before he could finish the sixth after he loaded the bases. Just the way it is sometimes, man. But it was obvious that he was able to pitch a little bit more relaxed with all those runs on the board, because we know how Stroman likes to dot his corners and stay on top of hitters in the most precise way possible. Daniel, what's up, man? Thanks for tuning in. Anybody else there? Let's chat. Come on. Appreciate you guys coming in, being active. So anyway, absolute destruction of the Royals. I think the first thing we have to talk about is Monday's lineup. Everybody was crying and whining, the crying and the whining. It just needs to stop. Every week I'm talking about this. This is a 49-21 team. They came into the first game of the series after Sunday Night Baseball, and I laughed at the lineup. I tweeted, excuse me, with a question mark, because I thought it was hilarious. They dropped the night after winning Sunday Night Baseball a lineup of Anthony Volpe, Juan Soto, Gleyber Torres in the three-hole, Alex Verdugo, DJ LeMahieu hitting fifth, Trent Grisham, Jamai Jones, Jose Trevino, Oswaldo Cabrera. Wild punt lineup. We saw that how many times over the last 4 years, but in much less strategic spots. Aaron Boone clearly had a strategic spot here. Why? The Yankees were coming off what that game finish on Sunday, around 11 o'clock. They got to get on a plane. They're flying to Kansas City. Aaron Judge hasn't had a day off this year. Giancarlo Stanton, we know, needs to be off his feet. We got to preserve him as best he can, especially with the way that he's playing this year. Anthony Rizzo got that double day off because he's been playing poorly. So that lineup was without Judge, Stanton, and Rizzo. managed to overwhelm the Padres in the first inning, scored two runs, scored another two runs in the fourth. And again, this was against one of the all-star front runners in Seth Lugo. He did end up going seven innings. He allowed four earned runs and on eight hits and a walk. But the damage was already done for the Yankees. They scored the four runs that they needed to with the lineup that we didn't think was going to produce two runs. And then the pitching held strong. Why? Carlos Rodon started this game, folks. What happened last time he was on the mound in Kansas City? Probably the worst outcome that fans were nervous were going to set that was going to set the tone for an awful 2024. Why? Leading up to that point, he started in Kansas City the last outing of his season, end of September. He didn't record an out. He gave up eight earned runs. He turned his back on Matt Blake when Matt Blake came to came out for a mound visit, and the whole world freaked out. And obvious reasons why. We did too. It was a high stress 82-80 season. Completely disappointing. It felt like the team was never in it after Aaron Judge went down. So like, even when they were still pacing for a wild card spot in August, it didn't feel like they were going to make it. So at that point you're sitting there and you're like, okay, they did nothing at the trade deadline. The least that we can do is get Carlos Rodon back on track for 2024. He's dealt with injuries. He's dealt with inconsistent play. He needs a few confidence boosters. And he was slowly getting back on track, not in the manner that fans had hoped, but baby steps. Then finally, the last start of the season, comes to Kansas City, gets absolutely knocked around. The character issues arose. He blew those kisses to the Angels fans, or not the fan, the Yankees fans at Angel Stadium that were booing him after one of his poor starts earlier in the season, which created bad optics. And then you have this Royal start where he gets absolutely killed. His ERA goes up one full run in after one start. And it looked like he was disrespecting the coaching staff. You know, Aaron Boone had to talk about it. There was discussions behind closed doors. It was the worst possible way for Carlos Rodon to put himself in a good position to go into the offseason with a clear head, to prepare himself for really an all-important 2024. Because when you sign a contract like that, sign a six-year, $162 million deal, and your results were that first year, incomplete season, injuries, inconsistent play, hot-headedness, uninspiring quotes after starts and things like that. It was really, really bad. It was really discouraging, and it got everybody talking. You know, you don't want to give these talking points to, places like WFAN or these crazy people on social media who are going to push forth the narrative of the salaciousness and the dramatics. Carlos Rodon comes back to Kansas City. His post-game comments couldn't have been better and more in line with what this team is trying to embody this year. He said he had this date circled on the calendar because he knew that the moment was coming. He knew that he needed to rebound. He knew that he had to make up for what had happened the previous year. What did he do? Seven innings, one earned run, five hits, zero walks. Sure, the strikeouts weren't there. Do we really care? He mowed through the lineup. He trusted his defense. He didn't give up much hard contact. And the result was putting a lot less stress on the bullpen. Ian Hamilton came in for the hold. Guess who got the save? Michael Tonkin, who I guess everybody we want to chat about this. Is he a real bullpen option at this point? Could be. Could very well be. We thought, another narrative from earlier this year that had fans freaking out when Michael Tonkin was brought in for the save in Milwaukee after he had just joined the team. Clay Holmes, I think, threw like six pitches in the ninth. They brought in Tonkin for the 10th after they had taken the lead. He coughs up the lead. They lose the game. Everybody's losing their minds. Yeah, I would say that was a managerial mishap. Aaron Boone hasn't had many of those this year, so we have to be thankful. But looking back on it now, it looks silly. Tonkin, 2.54 ERA. I think he has a sub-1 whip. I don't want to interrupt you guys typing on the computer. Usually I'm afforded that when Adam's talking. I can pull up all the tabs. But, I think he has a sub-1 whip, and he has slowly become kind of an integral member of the bullpen. I don't know what the future holds. Ron Marinaccio was back, so that was positive to see after the Dennis Santana DFA. But you got Scott Efros on the mend. You got Lou Trevino on the mend. You would think that Cody Poteet's kind of going to stay, depending on what happens. I mean, what did he do last night? He twirled another gem. He didn't give up a run until the sixth inning. He went 5 1/3, 2 earned runs, 4 hits and 3 walks against a really good offense. Like, I don't know what you do with these guys. You have a surplus of pitching. I understand it's a good problem to have, but something's going to have to happen. Either way, Rodon, no pressure on the bullpen. It allowed Aaron Boone to go to the bullpen a little bit earlier in the Stroman start because he only went 5 2/3. It allowed him to go to the bullpen earlier in the Poteet start if he really needed to. Poteet went 5 1/3. I would still probably argue that that's way more than enough that he has to deliver at this point. But now you go into the series finale. You didn't use Clay Holmes yet. And you have Ian Hamilton on – oh, no, he pitched yesterday and got rocked. Sorry, forgot about that. But you got Canley, who threw 13 pitches last night. Weaver threw 14, Caleb Ferguson. So you got Victor Gonzalez rested for today. You got, in theory, Ron Marinaccio is probably a little bit rested today. You got Tonkin for today, and you have Clay Holmes. So I think that's probably enough to get you through the fourth game of the series. Nestor Cortez should probably be motivated to give – a lengthy start today. He's been really bad on the road. His start against the Dodgers was not good. In my opinion, he's becoming the odd man out in that bullpen. I mean, in that rotation, which we'll talk about in a second, because we have to chat Luis Gil before his series opening start against the Red Sox tomorrow. But yeah, the Carlos Rodon rebound, the Stroman efficiency, the Cody Poteet consistency. This team has scored 25 runs in this series. And one of the nights they had a lineup that probably should have got shut out if facing a pitcher in Seth Lugo. So we got to give credit where credit's due. The punt lineup shut everybody up. Aaron Boone's strategy worked. He wanted to give his guys rest. Those guys got rest. I don't think Anthony Rizzo has done anything to kind of make good on his 2 days of being benched, 0-for-5 and then 1-for-3. That seems to be an eternal work in progress. I don't know what this team's going to do about the corner infield positions at the deadline, but probably something has to give at this point.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
But yeah, you take 3 out of 4 from the Royals. In theory, you could kick back today and relax, see what happens. I know Stanton's resting today. Who else is in this lineup? I had it pulled up before. They went down in order in the first, I guess. But yeah, Stanton's resting today. Why is my ESPN not loading? Either way, this team is put in a really good position now. You're playing with house money today. There's no urgency. Yeah, it's pretty much the same. You got Judge DHing, Austin Wells in at catcher, Trent Grisham in center field, Giancarlo on the bench. And people are going to start talking, chatting about Jason Dominguez, who just got optioned to AAA after finishing his rehab assignment. Nonetheless, you got this series coming up against the Red Sox. You won 4 in a row. I'm not saying you go out here and you play with low energy, but there's definitely no pressure. And we know this team plays better with under less pressure. You see how they're relaxed when stuff's rolling the way that it is. But yeah, so let's go a little bit deeper here. You have Giancarlo Stanton's two moonshots on Tuesday and Wednesday. After his rest, he's getting another day of rest today. Statcast, bro, figure it out. Those home runs were not 446 feet and 449 feet. They were 5 million feet. He blasted one to dead center over all the walls, and then he ripped one into left field that we didn't even see land. Charged off the bat, absolute rocket. When he is on, it's the most aesthetically pleasing home runs in the game. We all know this. We don't have to go deeper into that. I do want to give some credit to Gleyber Torres. I know you guys, all of us have been pretty hard on Gleyber Torres. Defense hasn't been great, very inconsistent. Bat, not good. He hit a three-run homer last night that extended the Yankees' lead to 11-2. Again, his home run and Stanton's home run didn't exactly come in clutch situations, but guess what? Whenever we can step on the opponent's throats, which is what this team did not do the last 4 years, they kind of languished around and kept the door open for somebody to make a comeback or chip away as the innings went on. What was the main thing that we watched with this team, right? They get out to an early lead first, second inning, and then they would be non-existent from innings three through eight or three through nine. And then slowly things would start to unravel. The opposition would come back. It would put the bullpen in a bad situation. It taxed the starter, you know, again, more pressure on the starter to be perfect. But this year we're seeing a little bit more bully ball. This team is putting charges into it. It's relentless. Nobody's giving up. You have Anthony Volpe playing every game. You have Juan Soto playing every game. You have Aaron Judge playing every game for the most part, outside of those couple of days off that Soto needed for the forearm injury, and Judge getting the travel day off, which was much deserved. And he comes back and he hits a home run. It's like nothing mattered for him. He goes 2 for 4 with three RBIs. And then last night, little bit of a more quiet 1 for 5 night, but either way, you know, rest of the lineup is humming as long as he's there and he's putting forth competitive at bats. So this has been an awesome series. We can't really complain with the result. It seems like everybody's kind of figuring out where they need to be in this lineup. I think DJ LeMahieu is, he's still struggling a little bit. I think the at bats are getting a tad better, but we're going to need to see more out of him. I'm thinking the solution there is probably a platoon. He's platooning with Rizzo at first, and then maybe if this team gets a third base solution at the deadline. We had a few people pitch Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and that really would solve a lot of problems, but let's just debunk that right now. I don't think the Blue Jays are going to trade him to the Yankees, number one. Even if they were to consider it, they would not be trading him for a semi-reasonable price. And you know Brian Cashman ain't paying the premium. Brian Cashman, every time he's hunting for deals, is never surrendering maximum value. He's never getting into bidding wars. And there are a lot more desperate teams out there that are going to be looking for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. There's a lot of other teams out there that the Blue Jays are going to prefer to trade him to because they are not going to want to deal him within the division. Remember, he's not a rental. He is signed through 2025. Toronto is not going to want to face him for the next year and a half. They do not want to have to, you know, potentially pay for their sins on a more consistent basis in 2025 than they need to. If he goes to the National League, the Cubs were reportedly interested. If he even goes to like a team like the Astros, you know, it's a lot easier to swallow than trading him within the division. So I'm not sure what this is going to look like. I don't know who the Yankees can go after. We floated the Jason Dominguez solution where maybe Judge gets some reps at first base. We saw him taking some reps there. I think, what was it, before the 2023 season or the 2022 season? Still tough to say, but you got Dominguez still raking down there. I don't know how much longer the Yankees are going to be able to hold that off. And you look at the lineup right now, we were talking about it last episode, like Giancarlo Stanton doesn't need to play every day. He's not going to play every day. Gleyber Torres, I know he's heating up a little bit, but in my opinion, still doesn't need to play every day. Same goes for Anthony Rizzo. Same goes for DJ LeMahieu. So there's a way for them to figure out how to get Jason Dominguez in this lineup. It's unclear right now. Holy shit. I didn't get my second cup of coffee in, folks. I'm sorry. Now I'm talking a mile a minute. So anyway, I don't know what the solution is going to look like there, but it's a good problem to have. They got the good depth. They have the personnel. They have the personalities, most importantly. And we're seeing it with this relentlessness through these first three games of the series and the resiliency. You know, Sunday Night Baseball is not a good is not an easy stage to win on. And with the momentum the Dodgers had, with also the presence of Dodgers fans in New York, look, I'm not patting them on the back for avoiding the sweep, but, you know, they responded in forceful fashion. They went down, they came back, they added insurance runs when they needed to. They won the game. That's all you need to do. You win the last game of a series like that, no one's kind of remembering Friday and Saturday, which I think helped them out a lot because the discourse wasn't as toxic as it could have been. Moving on. Luis Gil pitched in that Sunday Night Baseball game. Let's talk about him for a little bit. Did a good job. Proved to be, a tad mortal. Gave up a few runs. Teoscar kicking our ass. Either way, there's no way Luis Gil is going to last the manner with the manner that he's been pitching. It's not possible. It's like Jake Arrieta. What was the year he won the Cy Young? Like 2015. It's that crazy Jake Arrieta pace where he didn't give up a run in the second half of the season. Luis Gil was always going to regress to the mean, but interestingly enough, he is pitching the opener of the series with the Red Sox tomorrow, Friday night at Fenway. Matt Blake was on foul territory. Former Yankee Eric Kratz was asking him about the potential innings limit. Kratz was saying, hey, you know, I heard from inside, you know, sources that he has within the baseball world that innings limits were kind of made up by agents so they could do their best to preserve their clients to ensure that they wouldn't be run down by the time they hit free agency, which makes total sense. It's the business part of the game. It's how it goes. And Matt Blake kind of confirmed that. He was like, look, innings limits in a way are arbitrary. In theory, on the surface, like right now, Luis Gil is a great example. They don't know when he's going to need an innings limit. Here's the truth to all of it, though. His most innings pitched in a single season came in 2021 when he threw 108. Before that, his career high was 96. I keep your eye, dude. It's crazy. Anyway, Luis Gil, I think, has 426 career innings under his belt. He's got 75 already this year through 13 starts. If he throws 25 starts, he's going to blow past his career high by probably 40 innings, 40 plus innings. And again, this is his first season from Tommy John, coming off Tommy John surgery. So that is a concern in your head, right? It's like, okay, how much longer is he going to be taxed? Is this going to affect his long-term health? What should we do? What's the avenue? Matt Blake did not rule out a potential adjustment on that front. He was saying that moving him to the bullpen is a possibility, or giving him, you know, rest phantom IL stint, which I think he actually hinted at too liberally, in my opinion. He's like, yeah, I don't know if it's downtime rest, which is a phantom IL stint, or a bullpen, or a move to the bullpen. But he also said, like, they're not going to interrupt what he's doing. I'm not sure I believe that. Then again, you do have to look at the reality here. He's not going to keep pitching at this pace. So the Yankees will eventually have an excuse to interrupt him when he has a string of bad starts, or he starts to labor a little bit more, and his the length he's providing in those starts isn't as adequate as it once was. So it made Yankees fans think for sure, because in the back of our minds, we've been talking about this, or, you know, thinking about it for a while. It's like, when is this coming? And you were sitting there and you're like, okay, well, if everything kind of shakes out with the rotation as it needs to, we'll be in good shape. Luis Gil can either get some rest, get sent to the bullpen. And this was earlier, before we had realized he was probably the best starter option. Like, if you're like, okay, Gerrit Cole returns, he's back. You got Rodon, you got Stroman, you got Clark Schmidt, you got Cortez. That gets the job done, doesn't it? And then you can figure out what to do with Luis Gil. He's got a life on his fastball. He's got nasty secondary pitches. Like, that could play well out of the bullpen, right? As time goes on, turns out maybe not. He walks a lot of guys. Though he doesn't give up a lot of contact, you don't want him probably in terms of the fit in high leverage situations where he might be more susceptible to walking batters. And then that's when the hits start coming, when there's more pressure to make the pitch. When you have leeway through five or six innings, it's different. You feel like you can have the room to make those mistakes. When you're coming in out of the bullpen, it's produce now, dude, figure it out. Can't load the bases with three walks. Can't put two runners on and have a wild pitch and get runners in scoring position. So now we're sitting here and we're like, all right, well, doesn't look like he can go to the bullpen. You're not going to send him down. So what are we going to do? If Matt Blake and the Yankees think that they're not going to interrupt his progress with some of these potential changes, that's great news, but I think we'll believe it when we see it. The Yankees, typically these things work out, you know, work themselves out, right? It's like, excuse me. You have Clark Schmidt go down, and then DJ LeMahieu, sorry guys. Oh, robbed of a double. Great catch by the left fielder there. Runner on second. DJ put a charge into the gap, but it was tracked down by Blanco. These Royal jerseys are sweet, man. Really cool jerseys. Powder blue. Good stuff. It's like the Chargers. Where was I? Yeah, the rotation. So at that point, it felt like everything would solve itself. And now you're sitting here and you're like, okay, Nestor goes to the bullpen. Luis Gil stays in the rotation. I don't know what it's going to look like, but it's definitely something that we have to monitor. It's something we have to stay on the Yankees with every time the conversation comes up and every time they're talking about it, because this is going to have a gigantic effect on the remainder of the season in terms of where Gil is placed in the rotation, or I'm sorry, in the pitching staff. And how the bullpen kind of shakes out, because like I said, you have these guys coming back, you kind of don't know how they're going to be utilized, and it creates a lot of mystery. And like, you know, like the bullpen was a little bit on stilts there for a minute, but now things are starting to normalize, right? Like you have Ian Hamilton, who seems to be pretty damn good once again. I know he had a hiccup yesterday, but he's mostly been on the money. You have Michael Tonkin emerging. You have Luke Weaver being as efficient as he's been. You have Clay Holmes, who's virtually unhittable. You got rid of Dennis Santana. You brought back Ron Marinaccio. I don't know how we're going to be able to rely on guys coming back from injury. Scott Efros hasn't pitched since 2022. same essentially goes for Lou Trevino. Like, he was out in early last year, so he hasn't pitched on a consistent basis in almost two seasons. So I don't know what it's going to look like, but moves are going to have to be made, as we know. The conversation is going to be ongoing. Okay, so we covered the Royal Series, right? Like I said, 25 runs, really good pitching performances. Danny Altavilla. Why did the Royals start him yesterday? Really weird. Absolutely shelled those two pitchers. Red Sox series coming up. What do we got? What do we got here, guys? First series of the season against the arch rival Red Sox coming in the middle of June, 2.5 months into the year. We talked about this at length. Somebody needs to fix the schedule. I don't know why this is happening. Not only do we play the Red Sox for the first time on June 14th, but then we play them again 3 weeks later, 4th of July weekend. I guess that's cool, but I don't like when you're facing division rivals kind of stacked up like that, especially because then they play them 3 weeks after that at the end of July. So it you play them essentially nine times in the span of just over a month, and then you face them again in September for a four-game set. I don't know. Either way, I'd like to talk a little bit about the Red Sox because they are garbage, right? you want to talk about regressing to the mean, their starting pitching has regressed to the mean in a big way. Bayo has been rather uninspiring over, you know, the last month of play. Cutter Crawford kind of fell back down to earth. And then to make matters even worse for this team, they have the worst defense in the league. League leading 50 errors.
Right?
50 errors. The defense essentially lost them the game against the Phillies on Tuesday night with a two-run error. That was disgusting. They have a lot of players out with injury right now, namely Tristan Casas, who was never going to return in time for this Yankees series, but looks like he is now delayed another 2 weeks after his original timeline of his rib injury. But anyway, Yankees head into the series. It's Luis Gil, Cooper Criswell Friday, Carlos Rodon, Brian Bayo, Brian Bayo? I think it's Brian Bayo. That's how you say his first name, right? I don't know. Either way, Rodon Bayo Saturday. That's a nationally televised game on Fox. Friday night is ESPN Plus. Then you have Sunday night baseball, Marcus Stroman versus Cutter Crawford. The Red Sox are straight up bad, but I will give them credit. They are 500. They have no business being 500. They are better than the Toronto Blue Jays right now, and the Blue Jays have on paper a roster that should be blowing the Red Sox out of the water. The Red Sox offense is inconsistent. Their bullpen is solid, unspectacular. I think they rode their starting rotation as long as they possibly could. They had a lot of converted relievers there. Tanner Houck pitching at a Cy Young pace. He wasn't even going to make the rotation potentially at a spring training. So the Red Sox are winging it, I think is the best way to put it. I don't know what they are going to do at the trade deadline. They could be hybrid buyers and sellers because they're technically, quote, in it. But I just don't know if the front office, which has kind of mistreated them and as well as ownership, disrespected them is probably more the term. But they have needs at shortstop. They have needs at, you could argue, second base, starting rotation for sure, bullpen for sure. Depending on Tristan Costas' health and his return, like, they might have been massive need at first base. Has been a black hole for them ever since he went down. But at the same time, 500, I would say they're overperforming at this point. Secondly, is I love trashing the Red Sox, right? We love talking about how much they suck when they suck, but guess what? These series never matters who's good and who's bad. The Yankees could be a pile of dog shit and the Red Sox could be World Series contenders and vice versa, which it looks like right now. And it's fighting tooth and nail every inning in this series. It never matters, especially, oh my God, especially when we're at Fenway. The ballpark shrinks, pop-ups become home runs. The Red Sox find the shortest parts of the friggin' ballpark. They wrap them around the pesky pole and right. They hit 297-foot home runs. It's ridiculous. So I'm not putting anything past something bizarre happening this weekend. It's a heated rivalry, I think, still. Obviously, the players have commented kind of on how it hasn't exactly had the luster or the tenacity that it usually has, that it has usually had. After recent years of just the Red Sox kind of falling off the map, it's their own. They essentially deconstructed a World Series winner after 2018 to save money, which is like, I don't know how it's not. Actually, it is. The Red Sox have gotten a lot of shit over the last few years, so I'm not going to pretend like they haven't. But just imagine if the Yankees did that. Imagine if the Yankees said, you know what? We have a contender right now, but we'd rather save a few bucks and make money off all the tourists coming to games, and we're going to do that. John Henry comes out. He has this interview with the Financial Times. He essentially says that Red Sox fans' expectations are unrealistic. They're up in arms if the team is not winning a World Series every year, which, look, I hate Red Sox fans. I will never support you. Push comes to shove, Yankees-Red Sox discussion, but I'm not supporting a billionaire owner, you know, talking shit on the fans. For as infuriating and as insufferable as Red Sox fans are, Much like most baseball fans, they just want to see a good product on the field, and the Red Sox have not offered that since the end of the 2018 season when they started letting people go. And they fired Dave Dombrowski in the middle of a year when the Yankees were in town for no reason. Fired him less than a year after they won a world championship. And then brought in Heim Bloom, who I still don't think was a bad executive. I think was put in a bad position, but the message was clear. It was, oh, Dombrowski's the big spender. He guts the farm system in the sake of short-term gains to win you the World Series, which is exactly what he did. He came in, he was given a specific job. He got exactly that job done. And then the Red Sox disrespect him. And then like I said, the message that was sent was, and now we're going to bring in this guy from the Rays who has operated on a shoestring budget, or at least has had the influence of others around him in that organization operating on a shoestring budget with a team that's won, you know, when they went to the World Series in 2008, they were kind of perennial playoff contenders for, you know, that stretch of time. They won 100 games multiple times over the last few years. The foundational footprint there is one that I suppose you could envy, because they can sometimes put together a roster that kicks you in the teeth and you haven't heard of 75 to 80% of the players. But that's what they have to do in a small market. That's where the Red Sox are wrong. That's where teams like, you know, the Giants are wrong. You are a big market. You have the money. You need to instill some sort of hybrid philosophy where you are spending the money on the right talent to get people jazzed up about the team, to get people in the seats, to have that name brand recognition. And then you need to be able to find those cheaper additions on the margins of the roster instead of saying overhauling, you know what? We could do this at a fraction of the cost, and we can create a team of faceless players, and we could still win 100 plus games, and we could still potentially get to the World Series. That's not how it works. If you're a big market team and you're, you know, your owner's worth $4+ billion, you have an obligation. And I don't want to hear the bullshit from these billionaires crying. You have an obligation to spend the money. The profits coming in from these teams, record highs. The evaluations of these teams, record highs. Even if you're the Royals, you know, after the crappy few years that they've had. Even if you're the Brewers, kind of like, you know, Brewers are a good team, but Milwaukee feels irrelevant. Every year, these numbers, projections, valuations, whatever, keep going up. And you're going to sit here and you're going to tell me that you want to take a year off from free agency? Sure. Like, if you need to retool and figure things out, no one's going to fault you for that. The Red Sox have been in a perennial rebuild since after the 2018 season. And not only that, like, they were tricked into thinking their 2020 run to the ALCS was anything legitimate. It was not. It was not a good team. It was a lightning in the bottle situation. And not only that, they had the blueprint. They acquired Kyle Schwarber at the trade deadline that year, and they let him go to the Phillies. Kyle Schwarber is one of the best home run hitting bats in the entire league. And you know for a fact he would have been raking in Fenway over the last 4 years if they had re-signed him. They let other players go too. I don't need to go through the laundry list of dumb decisions they've made to make my life at least easier, but they might regret trading Alex Verdugo to the Yankees. That's been a very big difference maker for the Yankees, and I understand that you don't want to sit there and, as the Red Sox and pass up on an opportunity to get rid of a player that, A, you don't really want on your team anymore because there were clearly some cultural or you know, headbutting issues with the manager with him. But look, we did criticize the Verdugo trade. We thought that the Red Sox were offloading a problem on the Yankees that was going to create more potential discord in the clubhouse. But guess what? It's been the opposite so far. That can change, obviously. But the Red Sox got a bunch of whatever prospects for it. They got money off the books, big whoop. Not saving any money, not helping your cause on that front. Verdugo's a very good player for them. You know, I think he was unfairly judged based on the Mookie Betts trade because he was technically the headliner in that one. And the fact of the matter is that the Red Sox just got bad value on that deal because they attach David Price's contract to it. So you have the situation where it's like, okay, we have unrealistic expectations on the centerpiece of this trade that we made, essentially getting rid of the best homegrown player since Ted Williams. And if he doesn't live up to expectations, there's going to be all this discord. There's going to be all this frustration. And then you have, you know, kind of everybody turning on Verdugo and him revolting in his own way, him rebelling in his own way, not feeling supported by the manager, feeling the need to respond to Red Sox media members who maybe reported on things about him that were true. I don't know. The lateness to meetings, the lack of effort in the field. Sometimes there's a reason for it. Other times there's not. I understand there are players who are just simply insubordinates and they don't want to cooperate. But you're looking at what Verdugo's doing this year. I mean, is it not a 180 based on what you've seen? I think the structure in the Yankees clubhouse has certainly helped that. If we're looking at kind of his history as a player, but Verdugo's energy, if you watch a post-game interview with Verdugo, it's shockingly one of the more eloquent ones. He's got something to say. He's got life in his voice. He is very insightful and analytical about parts of the game and how players approach the game. How he talks about like the pitching staff all the time. They ask about, you know, who's performing and holy shit, what a slide. Blanco again, bro. Face head first, slide into first. He's ruled safe. I don't know if it's going to stand, but yeah, you hear Verdugo like start analyzing the pitching staff and it's like, shit, this guy knows baseball. This is good to hear. So Boston just felt like a very toxic environment for a while. You have the contract extension stuff with, you know, Casas. You've had contract extension stuff with Hauk that didn't get to where it needed to be because they both felt like they were being lowballed, which they probably were because they are in a situation. He's out. Sorry, sir. He's out. Under review. They're in situations where they are going to get lowballed, but guess what? It's not right for the franchise to do that. If you're going to pay a guy, pay a guy. If you have faith in him, pay him like you have faith in him. Don't try to lowball them and make them feel like they're not worth what they're worth. Like Tristan Casas, I know he still needs to find consistency. He might be safe. God damn it. But he's still a talented player. Tanner Houck, they've jerked him around between the bullpen and the rotation. And like, you're going to try to get him on the cheap because he hasn't found consistency. Guess what? Now he's an AL Cy Young candidate. So you're going to pay out the fucking ass anyway. Regardless, the directions of these two teams, like if I was a Red Sox fan, I'd be furious. Cause if I saw the Red Sox, going for it, like the Yankees have over the last couple of years, even though the Yankees performance did not match, look, Red Sox got the best of us in the 2021 wild card game. 2022, we flamed out of the playoffs in spectacular fashion, so it really didn't matter. The Red Sox fans were just laughing from their couch watching us get swept by the Astros. Last year, both were bad, but it was an absolute travesty what the Yankees had done because of how terrible they were. So, like, right now, you're looking at that, and it's tough to swallow if you're a Red Sox fan. The Yankees go out and they get Juan Soto. They take Verdugo from you and turn him into a more productive and more culturally fit player in New York. They get the right personnel for the starting rotation. They are getting the production from their highest paid players. They're spending money, you know, like, they went after Blake Snell. I know Blake Snell said no, but the Yankees offered money. They paid Marcus Stroman. They made a very intentional acquisition right before the season in John Birdie to upgrade at a position that they felt was very needed in the infield. They needed that versatility. So, they're getting that. Those performances from young players in Anthony Volpe, who's taken the big step in the second year. I know the Red Sox have a few guys who are doing that, but the Yankees kind of have all these things coming together for them, and the Red Sox are sitting there in no man's land, like wondering what's going to happen next. And you do have to feel bad for a sense, but I also will laugh and I'll say, how does it feel? Because you guys sat there, you took 4 world championships in 14 years after bitching for 86. And you want more. And now you know what it's like to want more. And you complain about Yankees fans always wanting more because they have all the championships and the expectations in New York are greater. But yeah, at the very least, we could say that we have not had ownership And look, the Yankees have cut payroll before, but they have never intentionally, the manner in which the Red Sox have teared down the roster, not gone for it, called out the fans. Like, the Yankees have to tread lightly if they're going to call out their fans in any respect. And Hal Steinbrenner has known that because the backlash has been significant. He knows if he's not spending on a certain player, or Brian Cashman knows if he's not spending on a certain player, there needs to be an elaborate response in the post game, not the post game, in a press conference about it, because Yankees fans are dialed in. And I will give Red Sox fans too credit too. They are dialed in. They know what's going on. They can be a little bit delusional at times. So can Yankees fans. I understand that that's the reality, but most of the, you know, these are, for the most part, I think, smarter fan bases. I don't think that's an arrogant thing to say. I think when you're in a big market, it's especially a little bit more impressive because you have to navigate all these things, right? You have to navigate spending the big money on the contracts, evaluating those types of players, knowing what the right talent to get is. Farm system trades are always, you know, roster moves are always part of it. But the way that Red Sox and Yankees fans have been dialed in, playoff experience, playoff gumption, you know, understanding the grind of a 162 game season, being in contention all those years, whether it's the wild card or whether it's the division, there's a lot. It's a lot to parse through, and it's a lot to keep up with, and they do a good job of it. So nonetheless, I will I'll end things here. The Red Sox are bad. The Yankees should win this series. Will they? I have no idea. Bayo has risen to the occasion against the Yankees multiple times. Cooper Criswell knows the Yankees a little bit well. He pitched for the Rays, and now he's been pitching for the Sox. Cutter Crawford, I know he's been bad, but has been pitching a little bit better. If he's not being betrayed by his defense like he has been the last his last like four or five starts. So this could really go in one or two directions, but at the very least, the Yankees are avoiding the Red Sox two best pitchers in this series. You know, to date, I would say Nick Pivetta and Tanner Houck are the most fearsome arms. Although, man, would have been great to watch somebody hit a home run on Nick Pivetta in this series and watch him cry on the pitcher's mound because he's such a baby. But yeah, you look at this, the Yankees have, I mean, as favorable as a lineup as you can have. Luis Gil, Carlos Rodon, Marcus Stroman. It's honestly probably the best because your other options are Cody Poteet and holy shit, I'm drawing a blank. Who else is in this? Oh, Nestor Cortez, who's pitching right now. Get a clue, Thomas. Get a clue. Still 0-0 in this Yankees-Royals game. But that's where we'll leave you. Series against the Red Sox coming up. It's going to be, you know, these teams are going to go after each other. The Red Sox, if they can muster another win against the Phillies, will take a series against the best team in the NL, and then they'll have a chance to kind of get back on track against the best team in the AL. You know, it's an opportunity for them, and they're not giving up by any means. Like I said, this is a 500 team that should not be 500 by any means. Let's look at the lineup they trotted out last night just before we sign off here, so you can get a clue about how bad this team is. Jaron Duran, who's been good, leading off. Rob Refsnyder, who I don't understand is good, batting second. He is hitting .325 with a .480 slugging. Absolutely ridiculous. Tyler O'Neill, who's been in and out of the lineup with injuries, but has largely impressed, I think, with his time on the field. He's been a good power threat. And he's super athletic, but he's been slowed by knee issues. Rafael Devers, same thing. Really good player, slowed by knee issues. Don't know how that's going to turn out. Connor Wong, having a friggin' unbelievable season. This guy's batting .329 with a .450 slugging. I don't know how he's doing it. Emmanuel Valdez, he hasn't been great, but he packs some power as a, you know, younger prospect. Bobby Dalbec shouldn't be in this lineup. David Hamilton shouldn't be in this lineup. Sidan Rafaela, good player, but not really getting it together. Dom Smith gets regular reps in this lineup. Vaughn Grissom, before he went down with another injury, was bad. He was just straight up bad. I know he had injuries in the preseason that affected him. He had injuries last year that affected him. He got the flu right after he came back from his injury, so it was a tough comeback. He was delayed. So the Red Sox are relying on their pitching to kind of get them through it. And it's, you know, it's putting pressure on everybody. We've seen this situation before. Who else did they have? Oh, that was the other thing I want to remember. They split a four-game series with the White Sox. The White Sox are the worst team you've ever seen. So that's kind of what you're looking at with this Red Sox team. Like they definitely don't go without a fight, but they have not been able to capitalize on weak spots in their schedule. We'll see what happens tonight. They're playing the Phillies. I don't think they're going to take two out of three with how they've been playing, but you just never know. Can't write them off in this series. Yankees heading to Fenway. Have yourselves a time, folks. It's been a great week. The turnaround and discourse from Saturday until now has been excellent. Let's keep that up. If we lose a game against the Red Sox in the series opener, it's not a big deal. It's just not. Baseball's a long season. Gerrit Cole, by the way, expect to make his third rehab start tomorrow. The Yankees thought projected he might be able to come back for this Red Sox series. It's obviously not happening if he's pitching in the minors on Friday. So maybe target next week against the Orioles. That'd be pretty sick. Anyway, folks, that's it for today. Little preview, little primer, solo ep. Can't believe I talked this long. Feel free to tell me to shut up in the chat. I'll cut the episode short. Going to try to get some guests next week. If not, it'll be shorter solo eps with me. Adam is gone until the 24th. He'll be back for then. After a week and a half of Yankees baseball, I wonder if he's watching out there with the time difference. Anyway, everybody, thank you for tuning in. Thank you again, as always, for supporting the Yanks Go Yard podcast. Please like and subscribe to our YouTube channel. It's right here, Yanks Go Yard YouTube. Pretty simple. Head on over to yanksgoyard.com. We got plenty of content there for you. We're keeping up with everything that relates to the Yankees, their rivals, trade deadline stuff, little news updates, minor league things. Come on. You guys want to stay informed? We got you covered. Again, the podcast is on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. Search for us. Find us. Leave us a five-star review. Why not? It can't hurt. Like, I'm a five-star guy, aren't I? At the very least, I'm a four-star, and I'm fine with that review. Just none of that three-star bullshit. It's like, you know, when you're giving the Uber driver, like, how bad is – we're talking Yankees. How bad can this possibly be? How bad was the Uber driver? Did you get in a five-car pileup on the 12-minute drive you were on? No. He got you to where you needed to be. Did you puke in the backseat because he was – swerving? If you didn't, great. It's a five-star review. You can't ruin our careers with a three-star or a two-star. It's just not right. DraftKings, don't forget it. Yanks Go Yard is the promo code. You bet $5. Whether you win or lose, you get $150 in bonus bets. It's the best deal out there, dude. We have another one from Caesars. That one's YGY1000. We talk about it on every podcast. It'll be on the next one. But for today, it's DraftKings. So don't forget the name. Thank you guys for tuning in. Going for the series sweep right now. We're in the fourth inning of this fourth game of the series against the Royals. And Verdugo just missed the double. 0-0. They're going at it. Nestor Cortez is holding strong. Hopefully we get the bullpen a little bit of rest before the series against the Red Sox. That'd be nice because we had to use a bunch of arms last night. Anyway, it's a series win. Another one in the books. And then we'll be heading up to Boston. Enjoy your weekend. It's Father's Day. Happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. Enjoy yourselves. Summer's kicking off nicely. We're getting some great weather here. Enjoy some baseball. Don't forget it. Games all over the place. Watch some other games. You know, educate yourself on the whole league. It's good to do that. We'll talk to you again on Monday, 2 p.m. Eastern, live right here, recapping the Red Sox series, going over the bigger storylines, having some fun. Once again, thank you guys for tuning in. We hope to see you again soon. Take care.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.